हरे कृष्णा, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नमस्ते। हे कृष्णा, आई एम सॉरी दैट लास्ट सैटरडे आई कुड नॉट कम ऑन टू दिस प्रोग्राम बिकॉज आई वाज ट्रैवलिंग and actually last Saturday I had to go to IIT Kharagpur, and there I had to attend the program. So today also I have a meeting, and we are in the place called Tirupati. Atma, what's happening? Hari Bol. Atma, there is a disturbance.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj?
Yes. What's happening?
I'm sorry. Is there a problem?
Yeah, I could hear. I mean, there was some disturbance at the back.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Sorry.
I was in... Today, I'm in Tirupati, in South India, in Andhra Pradesh, and we have our midterm GBC meeting there, and the meeting started from yesterday. Anyway, so the last conference we had, we discussed about the 7th chapter of the first canto of Shrimad Bhagavatam, where Narad Muni came and revealed to Srila Vasudeva the cause of his despondency, the cause of his discontentment. So, when Narad Muni instructed Vasudeva, the cause was that he systematically presented the spiritual wisdom of the Vedas, but he basically dealt only with the material aspect of it. He basically dealt mainly with karma kanda, and at the most it led up to the point of liberation, dharma, artha, kama and moksha, or in simple words we can say that they dealt with karma kanda and jnana kanda section of the Vedas. But he did not describe the unalloyed devotional service to the Supreme Personality. So that's why to refine the Supreme Personality. So that is the ultimate purpose of the Vedic wisdom, the Vedic knowledge. As it has been described in Bhagavad Gita by Krishna, Vedaishcha Sarvaiva Ahameva Vedya, that in all the Vedas, I alone am to be known. The others are all secondary consideration. The Vedas deal with material aspect that is there, but that aspect of the Vedas is simply to bring one to the platform of pure devotional service. So being advised by Narad Muni in this way, Vasudev then sat down in meditation on a personal plane for him in his ashram in Shambhapraj. Shambhapraj is situated on the western bank of Saraswati River in Badrikashra, which is high up on the Himalayan mountains. So there, Vyasadeva, in pure devotional bliss, started to contemplate on the Supreme Personality. And as a result of that, he saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and simultaneously he saw the Lord's external energy as well, Maya. He saw how conditioned souls are entangled or by the influence of this material energy of the Lord, Maya, entangled in the material nature. And he also saw that this condition of the living entity in the material nature is full of suffering, full of misery. And along with their suffering condition, he perceived that the way out of that miserable material condition is your devotional service to the Personality. So that perception is to Vyasadeva. That is the perfect spiritual understanding. Prabhupada time and time again pointed out that how our condition in the material nature is full of misery, full of suffering. But we think that we are enjoying here, or we can enjoy. And that is the illusion. That is the illusory influence of the material nature. We are suffering, but we consider that we are enjoying. Illusion means what appears to be, but actually it is. It appears to be joyful. It appears that we are enjoying in the material nature, but actually our condition is full of misery, full of suffering. So that is the influence of the illusory energy of the world. And it is the responsibility of a self-realized soul to remind the living entity of his illusory condition. That is what Vyasadeva realized through his meditation about the Personality of God. That the suffering condition of the living entity can be mitigated only through pure devotional service, only through the bhakti yoga or devotional service, which begins with surrender. That's why in Bhagavad Gita, the final instruction of Krishna is that one should surrender. He's urging us to surrender. And then Srimad Bhagavatam is describing what happens when one surrenders to Krishna. So that is the unalloyed devotion, which begins with surrender. Dharma prachita koita vastra paramane matsara. Through this surrender, the heart becomes free from the influence of the material nature, which entails lust, greed, anger, etc. So, only through surrender that our heart becomes purified, freed from the influence of the illusory energy of the Lord, surrender to Krishna. Mami vaje prapattanate, maya metam tanate. The living entities are entrapped in the world of maya, the world of illusion. But when one surrenders to Krishna, mami vaje prapattanate, very easily he crosses over Tarantiti. He very easily surmounts the influencer. So that is how Krishna reminded us, and Vasudev is presenting it. And Vasudev then began to describe, started off the description here, started off with the birth of Parikshit, the battle of Kurukshetra is over, the Pandavas won the battle. The only three persons, or you can say four, including Duryodhana, only four warriors in that battle from the Kaurava side survived. Duryodhana, Ashwatthama, Kritavarma, and Kripacharya. And Duryodhana ran away from the battlefield and he was hiding. He was hiding underwater. He had the mystic power that he could go underwater and stay there. And one hunter saw that Duryodhana was entering into the water and he came and reported to the Pandavas that Duryodhana is hiding there. So Pandavas along with Krishna went there. And Bhima started to insult Duryodhana, calling him a coward who is running away and hiding. And being insulted in this way, Duryodhana came out of the body. And Yudhishthira Maharaj was so fair that Duryodhana actually appealed to Yudhishthira Maharaj. That look, I am alone. Don't attack me. Although they had reasons to attack Duryodhana jointly and kill him, because that's what they did with Abhimanyu. Seven Maharathis surrounded Abhimanyu, and when he was unarmed, they killed him. But Yudhishthira Maharaj was so fair that he responded to Duryodhana and he told him, fine, you select any one of us and if you can defeat, then we will consider that we have been defeated. The battle was over, the Pandavas won the battle, Kaurava army was practically destroyed, but still Yudhishthira Maharaj is giving him. Out of our five of us, you select any one of us and you can be given the option of selecting any weapon to fight with. And this was actually a very critical situation. But Duryodhana also had some nobility. So Duryodhana decided to fight with Bhima, who was the strongest of the five. And he selected mess to fight with. So he was expert. He was very, very expert in mess fight. He actually learned to fight with mess from Balaram himself. Balaram taught Duryodhana. Therefore, Duryodhana in this fight was actually unparalleled. And not only that, for 13 years, when the Pandavas were away, Duryodhana actually made an iron Bhima, made a Bhima's body out of iron, and he used to practice that mess fight, smashing that. While Pandavas were in exile in the forest and 1 year in government. So he selected Bhima and he selected Mess. Bhima also was an expert, but Bhima was stronger he was superior in strength, but Duryodhana was superior in misfight, in skill. So anyway, so that was the challenge that Pandava accepted. And Bhima and Duryodhana started to fight. But in that fight, Bhima was actually in a difficult situation. Duryodhana had the upper hand. It was around that time that Krishna indicated Bhima that he should hit Duryodhana on his thighs, reminding him of his vow. In the meantime, before the battle started, that next fight started between Bhima and Duryodhana, Balaram was in pilgrimage when the battle of Kurukshetra, when the Pandavas and Kauravas decided to fight in the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Balaram decided not to side with anybody and he just left on a pilgrimage. But at that time, Balaram also appeared in the scene. So in presence of Krishna and Balaram, the fight was taking place. And Krishna indicated Bhima, reminding him of his vow. Now, in a mess fight, it was against the rule to hit below the belt. But Krishna instructed Bhima to do that. And so Bhima made a move in which Duryodhana jumped up. And when Duryodhana jumped up, he just smashed his thighs. And with broken thighs, Duryodhana jumped down. And Balaram became extremely upset, seeing that Bhima, in an unfair way, struck Duryodhana below his belt. So Balaram picked up his plow and he was about to attack Bhima. So at that time, Krishna actually stopped Balaram, prevented Balaram, giving various reasons. And the main reason he gave was that Bhima took a vow to kill Duryodhana by breaking his thighs. Because when Draupadi was dragged into the assembly after she was in a game of dice, Duryodhana indicated Dushasana by pointing out his thighs, lifting his cloth and indicating Dushasana to strip. So because of that, Bhima actually took a vow that the thigh that he indicated in order to strip or undress Draupadi, he would, when the time comes, he would break his face. So in this way, Krishna actually justified him hitting Duryodhana. Anyway, so Balaram was specified, and Duryodhana was now lying alone over there with his thighs broken. And Pandavas left. And at that time, another very interesting thing happened. When Krishna, along with the Pandavas, after they killed, not killed, Duryodhana was not dead at the end. But Duryodhana with broken thighs, he was lying on the ground, almost dead, defeated. So Krishna told the Pandavas, the actual victory will be indicated when they go to the enemy camp and take over the camp. So they went to the camp, the Pandavas went to the Kaurava camp, and they found that the camp was empty. Nobody was there. All the warriors were dead, excepting Duryodhana and three others. But there were ladies and the queens and children and other ladies also came with their husbands. They also left, the servants have left, all the animals have been taken. So when they came into that, and then Krishna said, okay, this now indicates your victory. So at that time, Krishna told Arjuna to get out of his chariot. And so when Arjuna stepped out of the chariot, then Hanuman, who was on top of the chariot, he also left. And then as soon as Krishna stepped out of the chariot, without any visible fire, immediately turned to ashes. So everyone was surprised. What happened? And then Krishna told that the celestial weapons that Drona, Bhishma, Karna had used, the chariot was already burnt to ashes many times. But because Krishna was on the chariot, so now that the battle is over, Krishna withdrew his spiritual potency that protected the chariot turned into ashes. This is also another very wonderful indication from Mahabharata that how when Krishna is with his devotee, or when his devotee is sheltered by Krishna, then Krishna gives them full protection in all his ways. Krishna protects the devotees. Apparently, it was not visible, but Krishna had been protecting them during the battlefield, time and time again. So that is why it is said, Japsra Yogeshwara Krishna, Japsra Bhantanamita. Wherever there is Yogeshwara Krishna, the supreme mystic, and the archer, Arjuna, devotee, Arjuna, there is bound to be victory, there is bound to be opulence, and there is bound to be spiritual potency. So anyway, now Duryodhana, with broken thighs, is lying on the bank of that lake. So at that time, Ashwatthama, Krita Varma, and Kripacharya came, who were these three leading heroes who still survived. They all actually ran away from the battlefield. And so, seeing Duryodhana in that condition was very hard, because he was there. Monarch, he was their king. And that there was a time when the whole world was under his domain, under his control. And now he is lying on the ground, unattended to the local Kanda. So Duryodhana, seeing Duryodhana in that condition, they all felt extreme compassion for him. Anyway, then they went and lied down under a tree to spend the night. Ashwatthama couldn't sleep, and he saw that one owl came at the dead of the night and attacked the nest of a bird. The mother bird flew away, but the baby birds were there, and this owl mercilessly started killing the baby birds. So seeing that, Ashwatthama got an idea, and he decided to attack the Pandava camp where everyone was asleep. So after the 18 days of battle, when they won, they all were sleeping in their tents, respective tents. And Ashwatthama entered. And that night, Ashwatthama was particularly empowered by Lord Shiva. and he kept that he would become invincible, and he kept Dronacharya, Kritavarma and Kripacharya at the entrance so that no one could escape. And he entered first into Krishna's tent. And he kicked him and woke him up. And when he was unarmed, he beheaded him. Like, and that night he became invincible. Nobody could defeat him. Then he went to the five Pandavas' son, the tenth of them. He actually was looking for the Pandavas to slaughter them. But fortunately, that night, the Pandavas were not in the tent. They were with Krishna. But Ashwatthama killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi. And he actually slaughtered the entire Pandava army. And those who were trying to escape, Kritavarma and Vipacharya, killed them when they were trying to run. So in this way, the entire Pandava army was slaughtered, except in the five. So in this way, you can see, in the battle of Kurukshetra, both the sides were slaughtered completely. All the soldiers on both the sides died. In the Pandava side, only five brothers were still alive. And the Kaurava side, there was Kritavarma, Kripacharya, and Ashwatthama. And so then Ashwatthama took the heads of these five Pandavas, and he thought that he would console Duryodhana by saying that he killed the five Pandavas. And that way he thought that at least Duryodhana would die in peace. But when Duryodhana saw the heads, he said, "These are not the grown-up heads, these are tender heads. These are not the five Pandavas. These are the five sons of them." So Duryodhana was very upset when he saw that Ashwatthama, just in order to please him, killed five sleeping sons of them. So when the news reached Draupadi, she was very, very disappointed. She was very hurt. She was very pained. And naturally, for a mother to lose all her wives, especially when the battle was won. And at that time, to pacify Draupadi, Arjuna took a vow that he would bring the head of Ashwatthama and offer it to him. And so Arjuna went in search of Ashwatthama. And he found, finally he found her, and seeing the Arjuna coming, Ashwatthama ran away. Seeing Arjuna in this condition, he did not dare to stand and face him. So he was running. And at first he took in his chariot, but the horses became exhausted, so he started to run on foot. Arjuna was so noble that when Ashwatthama was running on foot, he also got out of the chariot, and he also ran on foot, and finally he met Ashwatthama and tied him up and brought him to Draupadi like an animal. And he was ready to slaughter him, behead him. But seeing Ashwatthama in that condition, Draupadi became extremely heartbroken. She saw the son, Rajaraja's son, he's a Brahmana. And according to the Vedic culture, the Brahmana should not be killed. Death penalty is not for Brahmana. Although Arjuna had reasons to kill kill Ashutama, because he needs crime that Ashutama had committed. He could have killed him. But Draupadi also considered that I am crying today in silence with the bereavement of my son's death. Now, if Ashutama has killed his mother also, he feels so why should I increase the pain of another man? And who is our guru? So in this way, then she requested Arjuna to release her. And Bhima was completely against the idea. And so, but then they released Ashutama. Yes, Ashutama used to have a natural jewel on his head. So they cut off that jewel. And it was symbolic to cutting off the head. Because Arjuna took a vow that he would kill, bring the head of Ashutama. So the Kshatriya's vow also had to be fulfilled. Therefore, it was considered that you then take away the jewel. And so then, although they released Ashutama, but Ashutama was so vengeful that even after you were being forgiven in this magnanimous way, but still he was so vengeful that he released the Brahmastra to kill the last surviving member of the Guru family, for each one in the womb of his mother. So, and at that time, Uttara realized that something is going to happen, something terrible is going to happen. So she approached Krishna. Krishna was about to leave for Dwarka, leave Hastinapur for Dwarka. And she approached Krishna and asked him for protection. So Krishna could realize that Ashutama has released Brahmastra. He destroyed the embryo of the Vajra. So he immediately called Arjuna to counteract that. And actually, Krishna himself protected Parikshit. When Krishna saw that the Brahmastra is coming to destroy the home of Uttara, he personally entered into the home. So this is how Parikshit was killed by Krishna, just because he was Arjuna's friend and Abhimanyu's son, Krishna's devotees, offsprings are also protected in this way. This way it shows how merciful Krishna actually is. And Parikshit Maharaj, in the womb of his mother, he saw how Krishna rejected him. He saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his beautiful form. And that's why he always used to question, whenever he used to see somebody, he used to wonder, is this the person now? Protecting me whenever. That's why his name is Parikshit. One who is always examining. Wherever he saw at the back of his mind, is this the personality you see? This way you can see that he was always Krishna conscious, always looking for Krishna. So the 8th chapter actually describes this episode. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam most of the time gives a description in a very short way. The more descriptions are there in the So the details are not so much in Srimad-Bhagavatam, but these details, especially Krishna dealing with the Pandavas, was mainly in Mahabharata. Anyway, so here we can see how it has been pointed out time and time again in the Vedic scriptures that the ultimate surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the goal, especially for the human beings, because the human beings have been endowed with an advanced intelligence. It is due to that intelligence that a human being is capable of discriminating between matter and spirit. Matter is visible, matter is perceived. Therefore, a living entity in his material nature becomes naturally entangled with matter and think that matter is the ultimate reality. And they think that this world of matter is the real identity. But a human being with his developed intelligence can come to the platform of understanding the existence of the soul that makes the body alive. Matter is inert. The body made of matter is inert, dead. But this dead body made of dead matter, is alive because of the presence of the soul. So that is the first consideration. That is the first step towards spiritual understanding. Brahma Jigyasa, the inquiry of the nature of the soul, our real identity. Who am I? As Sanatana Goswami asked Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Ki ami amare kano jarita? Who am I? And why am I being afflicted with threefold miseries? So that is the real knowledge. Why I am suffering? The real knowledge is the understanding, or real knowledge is the real. Why I am suffering. An illusion is I am enjoying, I am the enjoyer, I am the one. This material nature is meant to change. That is the illusion. So illusion and reality. Ignorance and knowledge. So we all are in ignorance. Om of Jnanatimira. The dark, deep, dark ignorance we all are submerged in this material nature. But the bona fide spiritual master comes and enlightens us with the transcendental. Chakshu vim vilitam. Tasmai Shri. So the spiritual master actually reminds us about our real identity and gives us all the information about understanding our identity. So that is the goal of life, to come to the platform of recognizing our spiritual identity. So time and time again we will see in Srimad Bhagavatam the same point has been most wonderful time and time again. Because just by hearing words we may not conceive it. we may not understand, we may not remember. So there is a reminder that so in this 8th chapter, we have been present here. Thank you all very much. All glory is to Srila Prabhupada. Does anybody have any question? Atma?
Yes, Kurmaj?
You can unmute it.
Sure. So, if you have any questions from your side, the people in the room with you, Guru Maharaj, then please take them, and we can also take the callers.
Okay. Is there any question? Yeah. Krishnananda Prabhu, a very wonderful disciple of his holiness, Radhanath Maharaj, who is a IIT graduate, and he's a gold medalist also. Master's MS MTech. So Krishnananda Prabhu has the first question.
Sure. I would just like to make one quick announcement, Guru Maharaj, that if any of the callers have a question, please dial *6.
Yes. Just making
it. Sorry, Guru Maharaj. Please carry
on. Okay. Go ahead. Make the announcement.
I was just saying, if any of the callers have questions, then please dial *6. That's all, Guru Maharaj. Please carry on.
Krishnananda Prabhu.
There seems to be a difference in behavior, like we see in behavior of human and the behavior of Vishnu. It was a little different that Vishnu was thinking that Ashutama should be killed. Now, both are pure devotees. Pure devotees both exhibit all 26 qualities, like daya and protection. So, how can you understand?
Very nice. So did everybody hear the question of Krishnananda Prabhu? Or should I repeat?
Guru Maharaj, if you can repeat for the callers, please.
So Krishnananda Prabhu's question is that we see that there is a difference in behavior, say for example, between Bhima and Yudhishthira Maharaj. Both of them are pure devotees endowed with 26 qualities, in full of compassion and mercy and tolerance. But then why do we see that this contradiction in their behavior? Answer to that is, you see, a pure devotee is in a transcendental platform. Not necessarily always in a mode of goodness. Sometimes a pure devotee can be in the mode of passion. Sometimes he can even be in the mode of passion and ignorance. For example, Vritrasura. And so pure devotee's characteristic is, the purity of his devotion is, that whatever he does is for Krishna. So they're using their respective nature. Bhim's nature is passionate. Yudhishthira Maharaj's nature is in goodness. But as you said, both of them are pure devotees. So the consideration of pure devotee is not in the modes. They are in a transcendental mode. In that transcendental mode, there is, you know, dealing with passion and goodness as well. But whatever is happening is pure goodness, because it's for Krishna's nature, Krishna's pleasure. Hare Krishna. Any other question? Okay. Atma? Yeah.
I'm sorry, Guru Maharaj. I was just going to say there's one question from the callers.
Yeah.
Would you like to take that now?
Please.
Okay.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. Ananda Dalal speaking. Accept my most humble obeisances to your Lord's feet. My question is, Maharaj, you know, this is the first time, you know, I heard that thing that, you know, you mentioned, that as soon as Krishna got down of the chariot, that, you know, it burned to ashes.
Yeah.
Because in no other Mahabharata that I read, you know, it was mentioned, or I didn't come across.
Yes. understand. Yeah, go ahead.
And it also, is the from, micro, yeah, so
it, that,
it,
hello?
So it means in whenever Krishna is there, there is no distraction. As soon as Krishna comes down, means you know, from that position, things get different.
Okay, I'll just repeat the question for the benefit of public here. So you said it is in Mahavaya, or it's not in Mahavaya?
I can't
hear your first point? Can you hear me now?
Yes, and now I can hear. Now,
hello.
Yeah, my question was that you know that you mentioned that the chariot you know was burned to ashes, and you mentioned that you know Krishna was protecting because it was already burned.
Yeah. Yeah. So, what is your question?
My question is that you know as soon as Krishna leaves you know the protectory effect.
Okay, up to your point. Krishna never leaves his pure devotee. Krishna is always with his pure devotee. So it is not that Krishna left and that's why the thing got the chariot burned. The point is that the purpose of the chariot was fulfilled. Now there is no need for the chariot. As long as the chariot's need was there, Krishna protected it. When the need was over, it just got burned to ashes. Okay.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Hare Krishna. Any other question, Atma?
Guru Maharaj, there's no questions from the callers. To the callers, please dial star if you have a question. Otherwise, Guru Maharaj, if you have any questions in the room.
Any other question in the room? Is there any problem? Okay. Yes, Nilay. Bhakti Nilay from South Africa has a question.
But why when he came to Ashwatthama, they came back to that sense of compassion. Why didn't they do the duty and finish him off at that
point? Well, Krishna doesn't act. Anyway, question is that when Krishna, when Arjun didn't want to fight in the battle of Kurukshetra, Krishna provoked Arjun to fight. But when it came to killing Ashwatthama, then why Krishna why Krishna allowed Arjun to be forgiven towards him? So that is the question. You see, Krishna's pastimes are simply dependent upon Krishna's plan and Krishna's will. So it's not that you know why Krishna didn't do that. Or we have to see the underlying fact is that the battle of Kurukshetra had to be fought. That's why Krishna provoked Arjun to fight. Another thing is Krishna's yogamaya actually made Arjun to feel that he is compassionate and he's not going to fight. So that Krishna can give the Bhagavad. Yeah? Because if Arjun was willing to fight at the very outset, then there wouldn't have been any room for Bhagavad. Yeah? So that's why Krishna actually told, you know, to make this happen.